You are about to listen to the on-demand version of the Naked American Songbook. Due to copyright restrictions, we can't include complete recordings of the songs you'll hear in this podcast. But you can still hear me get naked with this undeniable song nerd, Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson. Now buckle up, kids. This one's going to go fast. Hello out there in Radio Land. It's me, Julian. Music makes the people come together. That's what Madonna said, and after 25 years of making the people come together through music, I guess she would know. Her catalog is one of the most successful in the history of pop music, adored by countless billions of people the world over, decade after decade after decade. Not even the Beatles, who also knew a thing or two about coming together, have had as many top 10 hits. A fact which many a music critic bemoans as proof positive that our culture is in decline. But those less concerned with looking smarter than thou will concede that many a music nerd has secretly shaken their skinny ass to Holiday at a late night campus party or a cousin's wedding. So say what you will, snobs. With 38 top 10 hits as of the last counting, Madonna is the queen, and there isn't even a king. So when Miss Ciccone tells you that music makes the people come together, what more evidence do you need? Well, how about this? My guest this week on the Naked American Songbook is Neil deGrasse Tyson. Boom. That's right, the world's most recognizable astrophysicist, the host of Cosmos, the director of the Hayden Planetarium, and the most widely read scientist in the world, has a very hard nut for songs. And not just any songs. Broadway! And before you leap to conclusions the way I did, don't expect to hear the good doctor wax on about the heady lyrics of Sondheim, Hammerstein, or even Ira Gershwin. No. The world's most notable rocket scientist came with pages of lyrics from Mary Poppins, Jesus Christ Superstar, and, well, you'll just have to wait for it. Now, I admit, I was taken by surprise that a man of his towering intellect finds wisdom, emotion, and full-on transformational delight in songs that I myself have been guilty of dismissing as middlebrow. But as another guest on my show once said, Alan Cumming, while extolling the virtues of Sondheim, I might add, there are no guilty pleasures.
I don't think any pleasure should have guilt prefixing it.
So when Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson comes to the table with a fistful of lyrics by Andrew Lloyd Webber, by God, you better be ready to have your mind, your assumptions, and your attitude adjusted. If his passion for these songs and his uncanny ability to make you believe aren't proof positive that music does, in fact, make the people come together, then I don't know what does. Don't pretend your toes aren't tapping right about now. Don't be shy. Yeah! Now more than ever, we have got to come together. I'm Julian Fleischer, and this is the Naked American Songbook. Holiday. Curtis Hudson and Lisa Stevens' 1983 hit recorded by a little lady known as Madonna Louise Veronica Ciccone. It is my way of celebrating all songs, the heady and the not-so, and also the fact that I have a great guest today, a fellow genuine song geek. Ladies and gentlemen, I am sitting here with Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson. How do we prefer to?
Neil. Yeah, that works for me.
I'm here with Neil,
yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen.
There you go.
Meet Neil. Okay, Neil, hi, Neil. I'm Julian.
Hi, Julian. Yeah, I think a song geek would overstate it. I'm a fan of perfect phrases that are laid down in the middle of songs whose intent is to capture your emotion while communicating some information at the same time and do so romantically. I deeply value.
You don't think that sounds geeky?
Well, so I mean, I value it. That's all.
Okay.
I've semi-joked with people that if I had another life, so this would be in a parallel universe, not this universe, because I'm too busy and my musical talent isn't sufficient to accomplish this goal. But if I had another life in another universe, I would be a songwriter for Broadway musicals, for sure.
But as an astrophysicist, mustn't you concede the possibility that right now in another universe you are a lyricist?
Yeah, I concede that. But I don't exist in that consciousness, so I'd have to be reborn in another consciousness. Yeah.
I wonder, though, if somehow we're not connected by some string to that other consciousness, and maybe that's what's speaking to you.
Yeah, I think that's unlikely. It'd be a great theme to explore in a movie science fiction plot. But I would find that unlikely.
Okay, so
yeah. Because think there, 100 billion people have been born in this world ever since the dawn of our species. If you're going to commune with someone else's consciousness, presumably it would happen in our own species before it would happen in some other universe, you'd think. But every morning I wake up as me, not with any special new talent acquired overnight.
Well, better you than me.
To bang out songs on a piano. Okay.
Well, when I first heard about your passion for songs, the first assumption I made was that you would be interested in the music because the relationship between physics and sound and music and vibration, et cetera.
The music of the spheres.
That whole thing, yeah.
Music is good, yeah.
But then it turned out that your real interest was in the writing, the lyricizing.
Well, I evolved to that. All right. As is true for anyone, there's a tune that gets in your head. Mm-hmm. Whether or not the words are good, the tune sticks with you. I can tell you that my appreciation for lyrics came much later than my appreciation for the music. And it's not so much lyrics as it is the human voice. And I remembered listening to, and what is a good song if not one that touches you emotionally? And I realized that at some point, you have to step out of the world of the instruments and enter the realm of the human voice. Because in the end, you're communicating with other humans. And it's the presence of the human voice that gets deeper into you than any instrument possibly could have. This is what happens in a musical. People are just talking. Let's go to the corniest kind of musical. The boy meets girl and they're talking. And then their feelings begin to grow. And there's a point where just talking doesn't work. They have to sing. And I said to myself, this is yet the next step in the expression of human emotion, and I was hooked ever since.
When did you see your first musical?
I was young. I was very young.
You grew up here in New York, right?
Yeah, in New York City. I would say the first musical, I'm old enough to remember the 60s, before black performers had any access to traditional musicals, they would gather together and form all black casts.
Right.
So there was Pearl Bailey starring as
Hello Dolly.
And Hello Dolly.
You're looking swell, Danny, I can tell. Manny, you're still glowing, you're still growing, you're still going strong.
But the first musical that I saw when I was, how old was I, 12? The first one that just hit me was Jesus Christ Superstar on Broadway with Ben Vereen as Judas. And oh my gosh, just the energy and the fact that it was so in the moment. It's rock and roll, basically. This, mm-hmm. And the emotion and the tension and the all of this combined, I said, wow, this is Broadway firing on all cylinders. From then on, I kept all my playbills.
Every time I look at you, I don't understand why you let things you did get so out of hand.
I'm wondering if it hadn't gotten into you as a youngster, if it would have gotten into you as an adult. Like, what is it about the lyrics that excite you?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think I also track the value of words in our culture. Mm. And it's hard to remember this unless you thought about it actively at the time. But the word superstar in that moment had extremely high cultural value. There was the word, I'm a star, and there were super things, but if you were a superstar, oh my gosh. That word had such stock value for mm-hmm. words. Words sure. come and go.
Yeah.
Words have intensity. Words grow in intensity. They drop in intensity.
Right.
I kind of track
and
this.
They change in meaning.
Casually. They can also change in meaning either because it's good that they did or because people never knew the original meaning in the first place,
right.
for which I generally have no forgiveness.
Really? I've started personally to surrender to the fact that things change.
I do, but I don't. You can surrender without forgiving. I mean, you can just give up.
All right. So superstar was a new word at the time.
It was a fresh word. It's also used in ABC Wide World of Sports.
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport.
They would have athletes compete in the superstar competition. It's like, right. superstar, I got to watch that. All right. So that word had a currency for about 5 years,
mm-hmm.
and it's dropped off. You can say it now, but no one's going to raise their eyebrows.
That's like supermodel came up in the
90s. Supermodel came up. That's another usage of the word super.
And it came and went.
And that trailed the first appearance of the word superstar. That's correct. So it's also a period of very high expression of emotion through electric guitar. And remember, it's 1970, 1971. The 60s are still going on, right? Mm. The 60s last until like 73, I guess.
But
the end of the Vietnam War,
right.
I think, is a traditional
Fair.
Ending
Fair.
Of the 60s. And the 60s didn't begin in 1960. We were still on the tail of the 1950s and music and that sort of thing. And so there is this electric music and the emotions captured in Mary Magdalene and Jesus and Judas in Pontius Pilate in the 39 lashes. All of this is captured. And when I first heard it, I said, wow, is this like all in the Bible? You know, this sounds pretty – some racy stuff. Uh-huh. You go to the Bible. It's all there. All of it. Little phrases that captured the essence of whole paragraphs in the Bible. And you get the angst of Pontius Pilate, who doesn't really want to prosecute Jesus and doesn't want to whip him, but he does it anyway because this is the forces around him.
Mm-hmm.
That is in the music. It is in the lyrics.
Okay.
And captured simply.
Can we listen?
Oh, you have the Broadway, the original Broadway.
Well, okay, sure. We didn't have the Ella Fitzgerald version, so.
My mind is clearer now. At last, all too well, I can see where we are soon. Strip away the myth from the man, you will see where we all soon will be. Jesus, you started to believe the things they say of you. You really do believe this talk of God is true. Soon get swept away. You've begun to matter more than the things you say. Listen, Jesus, I don't like what I see. And all I ask is that you listen to me. And remember, I've been your right hand man all along. You have set them on fire. They think they've found the new Messiah, and they'll hurt you when they find they're wrong. I remember when this whole thing began, no talk of God then, we called you a man. And believe me, my admiration for you hasn't died. But every word you say today gets twisted round some other way.
Yeah. I mean, so
I can see you physically reacting to this.
Now, Jesus Christ Superstar is a special case because its first incarnation was in an album.
Yes. The album it was a concept album.
It was a concept album. And so that predated the musical. And the musical predated the movie. So
it's not unlike Hamilton, by the way, which was a concept album and then became a musical.
Oh, that I did not know. Yeah.
And similarly, I think they both managed to like put something on the Broadway stage that hadn't really been there before.
Exactly. Exactly. And so you bust it open. And the interesting thing about Jesus Christ Superstar, just the simplicity of some of the weird. So one of the songs, I Don't Know How to Love Him.
Yeah. I'm eager to talk to you about this.
Yeah. It's just a beautiful, it's just a beautiful song. Mary Magdalene. The line here, they don't go out of their way to tell you that she's a prostitute. So what does it say here? It says it in the simplest of terms. I've said, I've had so many men before in very many ways. He's just one more. Boom. I'm a prostitute, but here's the rest of my storyline here. Do I love him? Do I turn him in? What do I do? So she has such a moment. And Judas has the moment. Jesus has the moment. Pontius Pilate has this moment. The storyline is filled with angst, people not knowing what to do or how to do it in these various moments. And so for me, that made it a particularly rich musical, and it's one of my favorites. And on the album, it was sung by Yvonne Elliman. I don't know who.
Nancy Sinatra has recorded it.
Oh, has she? Okay. Thanks for letting me know. Okay.
I don't know how to love him.
Is that not the version you want to hear? Well, I'm curious, like, does the performer matter to you? Like, if
it can. I don't hold that as a prerequisite. I just care that the singer has emotions when they communicate with me. And I don't care who the singer is. And there are plenty of people who can do that.
Do you care if they're going through it emotionally or if they're able to make you go through it emotionally? Because sometimes
One dries from the other. I'm not going to have an emotion if you don't. This is Yvonne Elliman.
I don't know how to.
So consider that in any traditionally conceived Broadway musical, the main character has a moment where they're singing about some kind of angst that lives within them, some kind of uncertainty, some kind of path that they don't yet know which to take. And part of the unfolding of the story is it helps them find their way.
It's called the I Want number.
The I Want number. Okay, the longing number. All right. So a good musical will have one, at most two of those, just to set the table. In Jesus Christ Superstar, Judas is that for the entire musical. Mary Magdalene, she has the moment.
I'm so with you when you describe to me how these lyrics function character-wise, psychologically.
Because every next line, this is a juxtaposition of unresolved emotion. Should I bring him down? Should I scream and shout? Should I speak of love? Let my feelings out? What's it all about? He scares me. If he says he loved me, I'd be lost. I couldn't cope. I'd turn my head. This is a cauldron of emotion, but captured in simple 3- and 4-word lines.
So the economy of it, the elegance of it.
Economy is everything. Oh, my gosh. Don't give me some long, complicated – I'll just read a novel. I'll read a nonfiction treatise on Freudian emotions.
Okay, but you also did put Gilbert and Sullivan on your list, so
yes.
I challenge you.
Okay, now they're not the American Songbook, but they're in there for a very specific reason, and I can go there right now.
Go.
Okay. So don't call me out. Don't make me go there.
Sorry, Neil. You are so going there, where no scientist has gone before. Gilbert and Sullivan and astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson. Yes, you heard that right. When we come back. I'm Julian Fleischer. This is the Naked American Songbook. My guest, Neil deGrasse Tyson, is the author of not one, but two new books explaining, the universe. He has an extraordinary way of illustrating the hidden complexity in the simple and the hidden simplicity in the complex. Perhaps it's no surprise, then, that he brought music by British operettists Gilbert and Sullivan.
If we go to HMS Pinafore.
Okay? Go to Pinafore.
Nobody doesn't like Pinafore, okay? There's the wordplay. You got to love the wordplay.
Right.
Okay? But again, it's wordplay with simple words. My favorite line in the entire... They don't call them musicals. What do they call this?
Operetta.
Operetta. Thank you.
I'm sweating now.
Okay. So my favorite one, we all use words that end in ship. We all do.
Friendship.
Okay, friendship, partnership. But to have that word then reference a seagoing vessel in a line in an operetta about the Navy, I just thought was brilliant. And another in Cats, there's a new day is dawning. You know, I felt like feeling. I never thought of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I like that kind of construction because it's economized, it's sharp, it's witty. It's a fresh application of words that we are otherwise just so familiar with, you never even thought be made interesting.
Right, and the cumulative effect of them is a whole nother thought.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. The sum of them is greater than their parts. Yes.
Science. I got him.
As it must be. So I give props to Gilbert and Sullivan for just the clever wordplay. And none of the words are complicated. They're just very simple.
Mm-hmm.
This is from when I was a lad.
Doily card, right?
Yes, of course.
When I was a lad, I served a term as office boy to an attorney's firm. I cleaned the windows and I swept the floor. And I polished up the handle of the big front door. They gave me the post of a junior clerk. I served the writs with a smile so bland, and I copied all the letters in a big round hand. I copied all the letters in a hand so free that now I am the ruler of the Queen's Navy. Serving writs, I made such a name that an articled clerk I soon became. I wore clean collars and a brand new suit for the pass examination at the Institute. That pass examination did so well for me that now I am the ruler of the Queen's Navy. I acquired such a grip that they took me into the partnership, and that junior partnership I ween was the only ship that I ever had seen.
The only ship we ever had seen.
But that kind of ship so suited me that now I am the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
But that kind of ship so suited me that now I am the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
I grew so rich that I was sent by a pocket borough into Parliament. I always voted at my party's call, and I never thought of thinking for myself at all. I thought so little, they rewarded me by making me the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
Thought so little, they rewarded me by making me the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
Now, landsmen all, whoever you may be, if you want to rise to the top of the tree, if your soul isn't fettered to an office stool, be careful to be guided by this golden rule.
Be careful to be guided by this golden rule.
Stick close to your desks, and never go to sea. And you all may be rulers of the Queen's Navy.
Drink your spill, and never go to sea. And you all may be rulers of the Queen's Navy.
When I was a lad, HMS Pinafore.
A recording from 1960 by the Doily Cart Opera Company. They sort of wore to the Gilbert and Sullivan catalog with Ella Fitzgerald as to the Great American Songbook. John Reed as Sir Joseph.
And just, you can almost commiserate with Sir Joseph here because he didn't want to be head of the people who ascend and didn't really want to ascend. There are some people like that, that just want simple lives,
mm-hmm.
but somehow they do something that makes them ascend.
They have greatness thrust upon them.
Greatness thrust upon them, just as Sir Joseph here. And another kind of construction I like using the same word within a few words of itself in a slightly different conjugation. So I never thought of thinking for myself at all. Cole Porter would be our version of them, for sure.
Right. Do you like Cole Porter?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I love Anything Goes. But I also particularly like the dancing in that, so the full staging.
It's like a total theatrical experience.
A total theatrical experience, right. And I think, what's the one about bees do it?
Well, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Excuse me. Yes, I think that's just brilliant. You know,
Even educated fleas do it.
Educated fleas do it. And in Boston, I hear even beans do it.
Right. Well, I mean, and you know, there's hundreds of verses. Over the years, he just kept adding to it.
I've heard, initially I was disturbed because I heard two versions that had a completely different set of references. There's one, a lost recording of that song. So I don't know if you knew, but Cybill Shepherd cut an album of Cole Porter songs.
I did actually.
And it was that Cybill Shepherd does Cole Porter or something. So there's a lot of racier phrasings in that song on that album.
I'm praying right now while I look into your eyes that over in that room someone
that they
is
could find,
finding
I don't know, that one. I came
the lost
out.
Cybill Shepherd, Cole
this
Porter.
This is it. Let's see if they found it. Oh my gosh, you got awesome people back there. So every verse will be completely lewd.
Great.
So listen as they unfold.
Mr. Irving Berlin often emphasizes sin in a charming way. Dear Noel Coward, we know, wrote a song or two to show sex was here to stay. It's true, took a more romantic view of that sly biological urge. But it really was Cole who contrived to make the whole thing merge. He said chimpanzees in the zoos do it, some courageous kangaroos do it, let's do it. I'm sure giraffes on the slide do it, heavy hippopotami do it, let's do it. The most refined ladybugs do it when a gentleman calls. Moths in your rugs do it. What's the use of mothballs? The world admits bears in pits do it. Even Pekingeses in the Ritz do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. In Texas, some of the men do it. Others drill a hole and then do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. Each tiny clam you consume does it. Even Liberace, we assume, does it. Let's do it. Let's fall. My kith and kin, I've one cousin that can't. Teenagers squeezed into jeans do it. No doubt we'll live to see machines do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. Let's do it. Let's fall in love.
You were just listening to Cybill Shepherd's rendition of Cole Porter's Let's Do It.
That was produced by Bogdanovich himself. The movie director produced that track.
I did not know that. Yeah.
And it has a cinematic quality.
That's right, with the kind of orchestration
of
it.
Yeah, yeah.
However lewd he was in his day, you can fast forward that and make it lewd for today. And that's what that album was.
Yeah, basically. But it's still tastefully lewd.
Tastefully
lewd. I mean, it's not truly explicit.
Back when you didn't have to be explicit to still come across as
explicit. It was
explicit.
More fun more to fun. Use innuendo Playful. Than to actually just say it.
Exactly. And I was introduced to some Cole Porter tracks for the first time on that album. And it, as is true in the search for art, you know, one piece of art takes you to the next. That would be true
yes.
for anyone. And
right.
it was certainly true for me. I was able to do it for $2.
And that is a bargain at twice the price. So whatever happened to Fay Wray?
Yeah, yeah. So Rocky Horror. Okay, that's...
We all know the story of Rocky Horror.
Nobody doesn't know Rocky Horror.
Could right. you just quickly recap?
I can totally recap. So, some transsexual aliens visit Earth,
mm-hmm.
and they have a party.
As they do.
Of course they do. And they're not only transsexuals, but they're from the planet of Transylvania,
mm-hmm.
and they visit Earth. And they're not only transsexuals, they're other sort of sexually different configurations of what was typical.
Less binary than we're used to.
Less binary than certainly was the case in the mid-1970s
mm-hmm.
when this came out. Brad and Janet, two very straight-up, clean-cut people, come upon their party. And then the rest is history.
How did you come across Rocky Horror, like everybody else?
No, I was in college in the late 70s, so I came...
You went to Harvard?
Yes, I did.
So you're in Boston somewhere?
In Cambridge, yeah, and I majored in physics, and... This was already in the underbelly of the mm-hmm. the gay community and the
punk and
punk, the renegade.
Yeah, it was a community. Weird Venn diagram of overlapping outsider communities.
Fascinating. That's the perfect way to say it. A Venn diagram of outsider communities. And so my awareness didn't kick in until 1976, 77, but it had already was making the midnight showings. And
you had like, did you have a dancer thing in your, you danced?
Oh yeah, I danced. Yeah, yeah.
Was that happening then too?
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah. I was a performing member of three different dance companies over about 8 years, but they're college troops and it's not the Bolshoi.
Well, right. Okay. Fair enough. But still.
That gave me a little exposure to a culture that had overlap in that Venn diagram with dancing. So.
And at the center of it is this song. It actually is in a weird way. There's something very beautiful, almost diamond-like about the coming together of all these different forces. And
it's an expression. Yes, it's a completely disturbed film, right?
Right.
I mean, there's everything that is regressive to what we consider modern civilization is celebrated
yeah.
in this, from murder to cannibalism
right.
to, you know, it's all there.
Right. Making life out of death. And
right, right. Exactly. Exactly. I'm intrigued by the fact that they were all aliens. That
uh-huh.
was just fun to me. That
oh,
was
I see. So
fact.
There's even a sci-fi thing going on for you.
Exactly. Now, of course, when you first see it, it's like, what am I watching? Why did I waste this last hour and 45 minutes? And then it kind of grows
so
on you.
Do it again, yeah.
It grows on you. And then I learned Richard O'Brien wrote everything about that musical. And it's like, my gosh, this all came out of one person's head. There's the fanfare.
Is this the opening of Rocky Horror?
Not the opening. No, this is the last. This is the second to the
last.
Oh, that's
right.
Yeah, yeah. This is the stage
yes,
show.
Right.
The beginning of the stage show. So here it is. Let's hear the lyrics.
Whatever happened to Fay Wray? That delicate satin-draped frame as it clung to her thigh. How I started to cry, 'cause I wanted to be dressed just the same. Give yourself over to absolute pleasure.
of sins of the flesh. Erotic nightmares beyond any measure, and sensual daydreams to treasure forever. Can't you just see?
Oh my gosh. So, first of all, this is Frankenfurter singing this. He's a transvestite.
Right.
Okay? He's not transsexual, he's transvestite. But we buy into this notion. He's stronger, he's more powerful than normal human, because he's alien.
Mm-hmm.
Fine.
Mm-hmm.
But now, in these four lines, his entire story is revealed. It's revealed with simple rhyming and simple words, simple lyrics. And it completely takes you by surprise. We all know Fay Wray. He wants to know what happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
Delicate satin draped frame. And you know, she's being held by King Kong. She's in danger. He's remembering the song. And he says, as it clung to her thigh, how I started to cry. Is he worried for her safety? Is he concerned?
It's just cathartic in general.
He is not worried for her safety. No. Why did he start to cry? Because he wanted to be dressed just the same. Now, you have to transport yourself.
And apparently being handled by a giant gorilla.
No, that's irrelevant to this.
Oh.
That's irrelevant. That's not why he's crying. That's not why he remembers the scene. No. It's got nothing to do with the ape. It has everything to do with him realizing he wants to be dressed like a woman.
I really hope that I'm not dreaming this whole moment.
No, just, no, think of this. There's no mention of a gorilla in these lines.
But
he's a transvestite. And you don't come out of the womb saying, gee, I'm going to be a transvestite. You come to this realization in your life. And he comes to it, and it's in a lyric where everyone else is worried for her safety, and he's crying because he wants to be dressed just the same. In these four lines, we have an entire biography of the star of Frankenfurter, played by Tim Curry. And this is brilliant writing. It is brilliant manipulation of my emotions without being too heavy-handed about it. No. This is just how it happened.
This has been very light-touched.
Very light-touched.
I have to say.
Wait. No, shut up. And remember, this is 40 years ago.
Right.
Okay? You didn't have transsexual transvestites making headlines. This was not happening.
No.
All right? This was shocking. This was a shocking lyric 40 years ago when this came out, just so you know. And the fact that you would sing this and celebrate it. So we just transposed to the time in which this arrived. Now it looks almost quaint. Oh, of course. Yeah, you know, any transvestite has that moment.
Of course,
yeah, just thinking,
we all
of course
remember Fay Wray.
Right. So I love it. Who doesn't love Rocky Horror? This one rises above all, just for how much it communicates with the simplicity of words.
Once again, we're back to the notion of simplicity.
Yes.
With you. You really like, there's an elegance and a compactness, an economy of words that you really enjoy.
There's an old saying in my field, your theory of the universe should be as simple as possible, but no simpler.
Right.
So, because if it's too simple, it's not saying anything.
No one here at the Naked American Songbook will accuse Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson of being too simple or not saying anything, and there's more to come. In just a minute, we have a lady moment. A My Fair Lady moment. The creative vocabulary of songwriting provided Neil deGrasse Tyson with a more poetic language. Having absorbed so many musicals at a young age may have had a powerful and important impact on the budding young scientist and may well have contributed to his incredible ability as an adult to communicate the wonders of science.
It took me basically my early 20s to rise up into this world of art speak,
right.
Basically. I don't know how other way to say it.
I love it. Art speak.
Dare you trust the music
Kunst
of the night.
Kunstspiegel.
So ArtSpeak gave me access into my soul of creativity, or
right.
better, because I'm a scientist, and yes, there's creativity in scientists, but it's a very different kind of creativity than what a good artist expresses. It enabled me to have conversations with artists,
right.
and to think about art, and to embrace what an artist is trying to do for you in a lyric, in a museum, in a sculpture, on a stage.
Well, maybe that has something to do with why you've become the personality that you've become, because you've found a way to speak science to people who need more metaphorical language.
I hadn't thought about it that explicitly, but I would have to say that's probably an accurate analysis.
Wow, I'm killing it today.
No, because if I there are colleagues of mine who are not in the same place I am, let's
right.
say, and they explain things pretty well, but often it's missing
right.
a soul.
You'll
have the facts. All the facts are there. The galaxy is this big, this right. many stars, this many things. But why does that matter to me? Or how can you make it matter to
right.
me?
You have a storyteller's spirit.
And like I said, in that other universe, I'm telling stories. I'm writing these lyrics and composing music to go with it in this other universe where I actually have the talent to do so. So I've come to learn that simplicity is hard-earned.
Yes.
I will never forget, is it one of the great wits of the day, George Bernard Shaw or Mark Twain, one of them said, "I'm sorry this letter is so long. I ran out of time to make it short." That is in my soul, in everything I do. Yes.
And your discipline demands it too, as you said earlier, like simplicity matters, like those theories that hold together tend to be the simplest ones, am I right?
Yes, the ones, but not too simple. Yes.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
And, well, simple for you is also probably mind-blowing.
And you want it to be simple, but deep. Yeah, try to keep the deepness in there. Otherwise, it just becomes pablum.
Can I ask you at this moment to pivot to the question of Lerner and Lowe?
Sure, go for it.
In our Venn diagram, like, Lerner and Lowe is probably where we're going to overlap the most.
Very cool. Lerner and Lowe, my first exposure to them, how do you get exposed to people like this?
Your parents drag you to Broadway.
No, you hear a song and say, "That's really clever. I wonder who wrote that."
Right.
And then you go look it up. And then there are multiple songs you end up liking, and you find out it's the same composer pair. And
right.
you say, "I've got it. They've sold me."
Right. And okay. once again, I assume you're more of a Lerner than a Lowe guy, or do you care? Or is there something about how they matched up their talent?
I like lyrics, but music matters too. No, I don't. I'm not going to split them up.
Okay, good.
No.
I like that.
Keep them together.
But when two separate beings come together and match up their talents, that
dare
way
I say rare. That I don't think Lennon and McCartney did anything as great separate as they did as a pair.
You heard it here first.
Dare I say that? I mean, am I allowed to say that?
Yes.
Because the creative
We'll
synergy.
Have to run it by the lawyers before we let it go out on the podcast, but you can say it.
Yeah, you just look at the albums they posted immediately after the Beatles broke up.
Yeah.
They're good. They did well commercially, but I don't know that they're quite what the Beatles were.
I actually don't think anybody would disagree with you. Yeah, I mean, they wrote some great tunes. Imagine, for example.
Yeah, of course.
Is obviously just off the top of my head, sort of.
Right, like, but you're picking the one song off the top of your head. You will have no such trouble picking songs out of the full Beatles
right.
catalog in the same exercise. That's
right.
all.
Eek. I'm just saying that.
Lawyers, can we tell you?
But which of your Lerner and Lowe tunes did you bring?
Well, My Fair Lady is my top five musicals. And
sure, I mean, it's a crowning achievement.
Again, they have to tell a story because it's a story. But in the storytelling, there's certain lines that I think are just perfect. Simply perfect.
Let's line them up. What's first?
How about in Why Can't the English? How about that?
Okay.
Here we are, just the setup.
Mm-hmm.
Eliza is selling flowers.
This
dirty
is Pygmalion.
Face, basically Pygmalion. She's selling flowers in the street to wealthy people coming from a show.
Mm-hmm.
Professor Higgins is among them. He notices her, and he's an academic, so he's not into the class structure that so defines British life. So he sees through it and judges that, of course, her street accent, her Cockney, is what's holding her back.
Right.
Not anything else. And then judges that he could pass her off as a duchess simply by making her speak better.
He wants to put her into language drag. People will think you're rich if you just sound it.
I think it's the opening song of the musical.
Look at her, a prisoner of the gutter, condemned by every syllable she utters. By right, she should be taken out and hung for the cold-blooded murder of the English tongue.
Ow!
Ow! Heavens, what a noise! This is what the British population calls an elementary education.
Oh, come, sir, I think you picked a poor example.
Did I? Hear them down in Soho Square, dropping H's everywhere, speaking English any way they like. You, sir, did you go to school?
What do you type me for, a fool?
No one taught him take instead of type. Hear a Yorkshireman, or worse, hear a Cornishman converse. I'd rather hear a choir singing flat. Chickens cackling in a barn, just like this one.
Gom.
Gom. I ask you, sir, what sort of word is that? It's ow and gom that keep her in her place. Not her wretched clothes and dirty face. Why can't the English teach their children how to speak? This verbal class distinction by now should be antique. If you spoke as she does, sir, instead of the way you do, why, you might be selling flowers too.
I beg your pardon, sir.
An Englishman's way of speaking absolutely classifies him. The moment he talks, he makes some other Englishman despise him. One common language I'm afraid we'll never get. Oh, why can't the English learn to set a good example to people whose English is painful to your ears?
That phrase.
Repeated
first. Oh my gosh. There's another gentleman on the street corner, and he makes an assertion. He says, if you spoke as she does, sir, instead of the way you do, then you might be selling flowers too. There is no simpler configuration of words that conveys disgust with a system, concern for someone in the street. It's a protest. So much is happening here that I just had to stop and say, I wish I had the facility of words that I can be this simple and this communicative at the same time. I live for phrases like this. When I write my books, mm-hmm. the, one every 10 pages, there's a sentence. I say, that's a damn good sentence. Let me bronze this sentence. That's, I got that one. The editor can't touch
Nailed
this.
It.
Nailed it.
Nailed it.
But I want that to be every page or not every 10 pages.
Right.
And
well.
We don't know how many drafts this went through, but how much conveyed there is what impresses me. It's not full of flowery language just to have language for language's sake. Mm-hmm. It's actually communicating deep cultural and psychological information.
Good gravy. You know, what's interesting about these choices of yours, too, is that, you know, even when you're choosing a relatively famous or iconic tune, you're looking for a deep cut inside of the song. You're coming at me with lyrics that just nobody else has ever come here
with. Can I keep going?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be lovely?
Yes.
Let's go there. Please. Please.
I love this song.
Literally. All right. Hit it. You got your people hit. Got it? I want to come up with something they don't have just to embarrass you.
They're pretty good, though. After 10:30.
All I want is a room somewhere far away from the cold night air, with one enormous chair. Oh, wouldn't it be lovely? Lots of chocolate for me to eat, lots of coal making lots of heat. Warm face, warm hands, warm feet. Oh, wouldn't it be lovely? Oh, so lovely, sitting abso-blooming-lutely still. I would never budge till spring crept over me windowsill, someone's head resting on my knee, warm and tender as she can be. Who takes good care of me? Oh, wouldn't it be lovely?
Nat King Cole?
This is a gorgeous recording I've never heard.
I've never heard it either.
But does hearing another version of it add to the excitement for you?
So 2 points here. Here's what just happened. Okay, nobody doesn't love the dewdrop voice of Nat King Cole. But him singing this, he's singing it as a beautiful song, not as a story being told.
You mean not as a character in the musical from which it is
regardless,
taken?
Regardless. Yes, that's the specific answer. But it still could have been sung as though you are telling a story about your life. He just took it as a beautiful song from the songbook, and he sings it. And you sit back. The rhyming is fun. The words are simple and pleasurable. But he's pronouncing his H's. He didn't say lots of coal making lots of eat.
Right.
Or he says heat. Mm-hmm. So he's not Cockney. So he's not poor. He's not in the street. And this phrase is Liza Doolittle singing of simple things that anybody with means has, which means anyone with means, they don't understand this culturally. And so all I want is a room somewhere far away from the cold night air. You don't even know how to sing about that. You don't even know how to feel it if you are with means, because you have a warm home. You have a room somewhere. You have multiple rooms. You've got an enormous chair.
You probably got two enormous chairs.
Two enormous chairs. Lots of chocolates. If you are poor Cockney in the street, chocolate is something you will talk about for days if it lands in your lap. Warm face, warm hands, warm feet. Oh, wouldn't it? Lots of coal making lots of heat. Lots of chocolate to eat. So I love the Nat King Cole song. It's a beautiful song. But this works for me as a story because it's sung by somebody who does value this.
Right.
And there it is. The entire story is told.
Lots of chocolate for me to eat. Lots of coal making lots of heat. Warm face, warm hands, warm feet. Oh, wouldn't it be lovely?
And that's what makes this rise up above the page for me. It's telling that story in simple language.
My God.
So
I feel like I've got a lot of listening to do. I've gotten very lazy about this stuff.
Well, I'm sorry. This is just how I come into it.
No, I totally agree. And I'm very grateful that you're here to charge me and I assume our listeners to listen a little bit more carefully and to think. There's also something you seem to appreciate musicals and the storytelling that goes on in musicals that's very special as opposed to just good pop writing.
Yeah, because in a musical, there's a point where I'm done with the instruments. Mm-hmm. Where can the voice take me?
Right.
So, okay, I'm done with the conversation. Now, where can your song take me?
Right.
Can your song help me take flight? To borrow a line from Phantom.
You alone can make my song take flight.
Only when you sing do the portals open up
right.
to your inner soul of emotions. And we know that's true because otherwise, why listen to any songs at all? You wouldn't have to. Just have someone recite the words to you.
Right.
It's the same words, isn't it? No, you got to sing it. Because when you sing it, that is the emotions going the next step beyond the simple meaning of the words on the page.
There's also, I think, just a basic pleasure in music, a basic sense of joy that comes from hearing a beautiful voice sing a beautiful melody that makes it seem more special.
Yes.
It's a shortcut to some kind of...
Yeah, it's an opening. Like I said, it's a conduit to
It's a wormhole. I did it.
You got a musical wormhole from... what lives outside your body to what thrives within your soul.
Bronze. Neil deGrasse Tyson,
dude.
How can I thank you?
No.
You seem to get more energy as the hours go on, not less. And I am so grateful for your enthusiasm and your focus, your attention to detail, and your just straight-up love for this stuff.
Well, thank you. I know you guys are a whole community out there, and I'm happy to just be this temporary interloper.
No, you're an honorary member forever. you do more thinking about this than most of this community's like highest religious figures. Thank you for sharing it.
Happy to be on.
The Naked American Songbook is a production of the Jonathan Channel, WNYC and WQXR in New York City. Thanks again to song geek Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson. He's got two new books just in time for the holidays. Welcome to the Universe and Star Talk, a companion to his own podcast of the same name. As for our podcast, you can always find us on iTunes or Stitcher or any of the other podcast programs you prefer to use. Get at us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and all of the usual networks social. Aaron Dalton is our Orion. Ellie Smerling is Cassiopeia. Hilary Bonhomme is the Seven Sisters, and Mike Shobe is the Big Dipper. Our theme music is written and produced by me. I'm Julian Fleischer. Thanks for listening. Keep it naked.
Nothing like a fresh universe. It works.
We could use a fresh universe, quite frankly.
Sure.
You're a powerful man. Listen.
Can I do one more song?
I definitely want you to
do one more song.
One more song. But I have to tell you something embarrassing, which is not uncommon here in the studios of Naked American Songbook.
What?
I've got to pee.
You got to pee?
Really badly. Do you mind?
Okay. I'll just take the show from here while you pee.
I'm
I got your engineer.